Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, how's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Open Floor. I'm John Gonzalez, joined by SI's own Rohan Nadkarni. Ro, full slate of NBA games ahead of Tuesday's election. We have a lot to get into, but I haven't seen your smiling face in a while. It looks like the beard got longer.
Yeah, you know, we're riding out this Dolphins win streak. I've decided 3 in a row, fins all the way up, fins for the win, as Jalen Waddle would say. You know, I've seen other people send tweets like, oh, the Dolphins are so fun to watch. The Dolphins are so exciting. This has literally never happened before in my lifetime. So I'm thrilled. I'm really thrilled.
I'm happy for you. I myself am licking certain sports-related wounds. So I'm happy to just talk about basketball. And we have a lot of it. Later in the show, we're going to discuss the Warriors' growing pains and why, Ro, you wrote about them and you say that you're not worried. I'm going to press you on that. Want to get into a little Bucks and Jazz talk as well. But first, because it's unavoidable, the Brooklyn Nets lead the show again. Over the weekend, Shams and a bunch of people reported that the Nets have delivered Kyrie Irving 6 action items that he must complete to return to the team. We're going to take them all one by one, but I'm going to rattle them off in a group first. Among them are apologize and condemn the movie that he promoted on his platform, $500,000 donation to the anti-hate causes, sensitivity training, anti-Semitic training, meet with the ADL and Jewish leaders, and meet with Joe Tsai to demonstrate understanding. That last one is very interesting for a lot of reasons, but we'll get to that one last. Let's start at the beginning, Ro. Apologize and condemn the movie. He kind of danced around this one. Where do we think he's completed this part?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. He sent an apology not long after the suspension. You know, I guess we really have to parse it, right? Because did he condemn the movie? He still kind of has said, I don't agree with all the stuff in the movie. I know we want to take these one by one, but it's hard because I think that, you know, condemning the movie or apologizing is going to go hand in hand with some of these other tasks that the team has laid out for him, right? I think that he's going to have to go through maybe some of these other things first before he's able to fully see why he needs to apologize or condemn for the movie. So it's a unique situation. It's probably honestly the kind of thing we should hear of more often. You know, a person this is a conversation we've not talked about on this podcast in a long time. There's been news about him recently too, which is Miles Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people have wondered if he's ever going to play again. And to me, it's less important that these people play again, but I like the idea of creating pathways for people, even people who've done terrible things. I like to think that there's a way to bring them back into fold, bring them back into society after they've taken accountability, after they've shown accountability to the people that they've harmed. That's really important as well. And basically the point I'm trying to make is that at least the Nets have kind of laid out steps here, right? At least we have an idea, a sense of things Kyrie can do to maybe help offset some of the harm he's caused.
Yeah. I'm less bullish on the pathway mm-hmm. back component for certain infractions. Mm-hmm. And you know, the one that a lot of people have brought it up is Robert Sarver. And I want to discuss mm-hmm. that as well. I don't want to get past the apologize and condemn the movie part though, because he had multiple opportunities to do this before they suspended him. And I thought like they gave him way too much leeway. I mean, you're talking about like a pathway back. They gave him a pathway to undo this, to like unring the bell. Multiple times he was asked about it. Multiple times he was petulant. He brushed it off and he said that he can't be anti-Semitic if he knows where he comes from, which is furthering the tropes that are in this movie. That, by the way, why is that even on Amazon? I don't know why it was available in the first place. But Kyrie stuck his foot in his mouth and, given the opportunity to extract his foot from his mouth, stuck the other foot in his mouth. And it wasn't until he was suspended that he got around to giving this like kind of maybe apology that was written out and posted on, where was it, Instagram? I don't know. I didn't feel like it was the full-throated, I totally get this, I really screwed up, this movie is, you know, abhorrent apology. So until we get like a genuine apology, I don't think he's qualified for even the first step.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. I think that the way I look at this is, and I'm with you, like, you know, I know I just made like a very general statement, like these things about trying to bring people back into the fold. It's very case by case basis, and there's a lot of factors at play. You know, like I said, the people who have been harmed by whoever it is, like, you know, I don't want to speak for them or what they believe these people are entitled to. As it relates to Kyrie, the way I see it is, I never kind of expected him to condemn the film when he had the chances he had. This is not unique to Kyrie. Like, you know, I think this, we've seen this in the country the last 6 years now. We've seen it with people in positions of power, but like, people are falling for conspiracies, man. Like, what are we supposed to do? Like, what do we, you know, I don't want to like derail this entire podcast. I know we want to get to basketball, but like with someone like Kyrie, like I think he's pretty clearly fallen victim to misinformation, conspiracies, whatever. And like, how are we going to pull him out? And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. There's people who work every day trying to figure out how to pull people out of that. And I don't know that Kyrie's going to condemn this film or apologize for it until he's kind of pulled out of this, you know, misinformation zone that he's gotten into. And that takes work, that takes patience. And I understand some people are like, we don't care, this guy just plays basketball, we don't care about him coming back, we don't care about him playing again. I'm not even talking about those things. I'm just saying, like, how do we save someone who's been at this point? Like, that's not to excuse the harm he's done. He's going to have to be accountable for that. But at some point we need to figure out how we're going to pull people like him out. If we're actually like concerned about getting rid of the anti-Semitism or changing that view or correcting that view, that is going to take work, unfortunately. And I'm just hoping the Nets and Kyrie are really serious about dedicating themselves to that process. Because I don't think condemning the film is going to happen until he gets pulled out of whatever he's been sucked into.
Yeah, the attraction to and falling for conspiracy theories is a massive issue. And I don't want to I don't really want to go down that rabbit hole here and make this an overtly like political situation.
It's also just depressing.
Yeah, it is, because there's truth and facts, and then there's, you know, JFK Jr. is still alive and he's going to come back and become vice president soon. And like, I don't know, there's reality, and then there's whatever world people who pay attention to that stuff fall into. Look, Kyrie's a do-his-own-research kind of guy. I don't think he's so far gone that he believes JFK Jr. is still alive. I do believe that he, you know, went down this rabbit hole and, like, you know, embraced, threw his arms around some really gross stuff. And that is, like, we can just stop right there, right? We can stop right there and go, there's a lot of really anti-Semitic stuff in this movie. And you can say, I'm not anti-Semitic because I know where I come from. That's not saying, oh, the things that I promoted were anti-Semitic and that was wrong and I shouldn't have done that. Okay. Like, that's the step that, like, just to be a human being and acknowledge, like, this was hurtful material, and people of the Jewish faith, like, were offended by it. And man, I really messed up. And I hope you forgive me, which brings us to this other stuff. $500,000 donation, whatever. That's like an easy thing for him. The sensitivity and anti-Semitic training, maybe that helps to your point, pull him out of going down this rabbit hole. Meeting with ADL and Jewish leaders, I think that's an important component. Maybe like sitting in front of people and hearing them express why this was offensive and why this material runs counter to actual truth and fact. I think that would help him. The last one, that I really wanted to run past you was meet with Joe Tsai to demonstrate understanding. This was really amazing. Woj reported over the weekend that for nearly a week, again, the Nets tried and tried and tried to get Kyrie to back off the ledge that he had perched himself on. And he didn't. Instead, he kept jumping off of it. So for nearly a week, this is a quote from Woj, for nearly a week, Tsai kept extending the clock to give Irving a chance to get this right for himself, the franchise and the Jewish community. And Irving never returned a single text message. He's the owner. He just ghosted the guy who pays the bills. Like, to say that he understands what's happening here, like, I just don't get that sense at all.
Yeah, that was certainly a fact or a tidbit of the story that stuck out to me as well when they reported it. Again, I don't want to be the guy who sits on a podcast and psychoanalyzes.
No, that's what we have you here for.
It's just to untangle the things at play here, and I'm not saying this is what happened with Kyrie and Joe Tsai, and this is obviously a very specific case in which there really is no excuse for Kyrie ignoring Joe Tsai during all of this, but like, as we've seen with Robert Sarver or whatever, I'm not saying Joe Tsai has done anything that Robert Sarver has done, but the relationship between players and owners of teams is often complicated. It's not the right word, but it's not like these people are often best buds. Like it's an exception to the rule when owners are particularly close to their players. Like the Mark Cuban thing is not a reality across the league. And so, again, I'm not trying to excuse Kyrie in this situation. Like, obviously, when you're in the middle of a firestorm such as this one and the team owners text you, you should probably text back. I'm just trying to give the context of there's a inherent tension between players and team owners that sometimes doesn't get talked about a lot. And there are racial factors at play, economic factors at play, et cetera. And I think something that has also happened with Kyrie is, and you see this a lot in when people are describing what happens to people who get caught up in conspiracy, et cetera, is like, anytime someone challenges you, it further backs you into the corner. You know what I mean? It entrenches your position, and it's just the situation's just such a mess. That's really what it is, John.
It is a mess, and all the factors that you mentioned in general about players and ownership relationship is true. This is a very specific case.
Yes, yes.
Okay, if you are accused of being anti-Semitic and you don't walk it back, not only do you not walk it back, but you double and triple down. And in the course of this firestorm, your owner of the team, who's trying to give you a lot of leeway, who's trying to give you the opportunity in this space to take some of this stuff back, rather than immediately suspending you, which is what I thought that they should have done.
Yep.
Texts you, and you do not respond to any of these texts. It does not give me the sense that, one, you are apologetic, and two, you understand that you have run afoul of decency and norms. I do not get that. Like, if I were Josiah, I would not sense that, oh, you know what? Kyrie understands that he really stepped in it here.
Well, that's
right. And by the way, and I really want to emphasize this point. I thought the Nets made a mistake.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
They waited way too long to do what they should have done, which is what the NBA did with Robert Sarver, which is suspend him. It should have been immediate. This is gross. This is unacceptable. You should apologize and do all the things that we've laid out for you. But in the interim, go home. Should have been quick.
Yeah, I mean, so that's part of the issue here is the Nets and the NBA exacerbated the situation by waiting so long. You know, Herring wrote a great column about it last week. Like, the NBA needs to act more quickly next time. And the backdrop of all this remains, like, the weirdness of the Udoka situation. He hasn't been hired yet. I do wonder if now there was so much backlash, maybe the team is somehow going to walk it back, or they're just trying to wait for this to die down. But if they had suspended Irving right away and announced the things that they were going to do, that would have been fantastic. I don't know if it's just because I'm naive. I'm still hoping that we get something of a good resolution here. I understand people wanting the apologies more quickly. I really think the NBA and the Nets made a mistake not suspending him right away, especially not suspending him after that first back and forth with Nick Friedell. Like, the course that they're trying to put him on should have been started right away, and maybe he would have understood the gravity of the situation, except you wait, and now it looks like you're just kind of, you know, responding to people or reacting, etc. So it's it's a bummer. But I think that the steps that they've laid out, I don't know what else a team is supposed to do in this situation. Unless you want to outright cut him, which I think there's great reasons to do that as well. So at the end of the day, the way I look at it is, it's like, the things he's done are abhorrent, but I want to be solution oriented about how can we make him understand the nature of the harm that he's caused, and what is there a way to bring him back? I agree, he hasn't exhibited the signs of someone willing to take accountability yet, but what we're hoping for, this suspension is the wake-up call that would lead to that.
Yeah, this whole situation is a mess, and I wanted to get into this part with you as well, which is the player reaction here. With Robert Sarver, rightly so, everybody was up in arms, players especially. With the Kyrie situation, it's been a lot quieter. And CJ McCollum was part of the NBAPA. He said that he hopes the players learn from this. He says that when you have a platform, you need to vet everything. He believes that this is a social justice issue, which he's right about. However, he kind of dodged a question when asked about why players have been so silent on this. And meanwhile, you have Kevin Durant, who reportedly said that he would have preferred that this was sort of kept quiet and in-house, which I don't know how you do that. He said it publicly. He was asked about it, as you mentioned, by ESPN's Nick Friedell. Then he doubled and tripled down on this. But I guess KD was referring to the disciplinary actions that the Nets were taking with Kyrie. And I think that's kind of stunning. I really do. I mean, like, I understand that he's your friend. I understand he's your teammate. Maybe you're trying to be supportive. But ultimately, like, what Kyrie was promoting was like some pretty vile stuff. And for KD to say, oh, you know, I wish the Nets would have tried to keep this quiet, it doesn't add up for me, right? Like, across the board, whether you're an owner or a coach or a player or a fan, no room for this stuff, full stop. And it doesn't matter if he's your guy. You can say, I love him, you know, I'm going to be there to support him, but what he did, no good. Like, and for him to like publicly say or take the position that the Nets should fall back on this and somehow like throw a cone of protection over Kyrie, I don't get it at all.
Yeah. He like sent a tweet trying to clarify his remarks, I believe, after he said that. I understand to an extent why, if he's talking about the, you know, if he's talking about the discipline specifically, you know, the list of things that Shams had and other people have now reported in terms of what Kyrie has to do to get back on the court, I can understand if as a teammate you'd rather stuff like that not get out. But yeah, it was just a weird moment where I think KD, again, the layup was right there to just be like, you know, I don't agree with his actions, but you know, he's my friend. I hope that the team's able to, you know, he's able to undergo these steps and get back on the court. It was weird because, like I said, he sent that tweet and he was like, I do condemn anti-Semitism. I don't want to get that mixed up. But, you know, he's also being asked in context of other basketball questions and then distractions and all this stuff. So, you know, it was just weird. It was just weird, man. It felt like a layup. But again, I'm just trying to see where he's coming from on that, at least. But it was weird that he didn't just be like, hey man, I don't agree with what he said. Like, that's it. That's all it took. That's all it needed for him to say there.
Yeah. Or just stay out of it. Yeah. Right. I mean, you could fall back on that issue. To be clear, this very much doesn't have anything to do with basketball. Right, what Kyrie did is like and said, and then doubled and tripled down on before eventually getting suspended and having to walk some of it back. That's not about basketball. That's just about what kind of human being you are and how you treat other human beings. And there's a right and wrong way to approach these things. But there is a basketball impact here, so we're going to discuss that. The Nets have not been good. They weren't good before Kyrie went and said what Kyrie said about the things that he said, and they haven't really been good, you know, independent of that. Woj reported also that Ben Simmons, who has not been healthy and who has not been the same guy since returning this season, he missed four games with a knee injury. Simmons today said he feels great and he's going to play against the Mavs. Thinks he'll be limited to about 20 minutes. But Woj reported that Simmons has been a point of frustration for KD and the Nets. Obviously, they needed him to be a big plus for them to play well and for them to excel, and they had championship aspirations, but especially defensively, Ro, he hasn't looked good. So impact of both Simmons not playing well and Kyrie not being around for a Nets team that struggled.
Yeah. I mean, what's funny is that the best they've looked has been these last few days since Kyrie and Ben have both been out. You know, that speaks to the talent of Durant. I think most of us still believe he's a top five talent in this league. What's interesting is you'd still think Simmons should work for them as like a perimeter stopper, but he just has not played with enough force or consistency. You know, we've talked ad nauseum now about the two big quote unquote lineups or the two non-shooter lineups. Like, those just don't work. And they can try a little bit with Simmons at the five. I've written about it, but that creates other defensive issues. I think the big thing for them is they got to figure out how to fix their defense. Like, it's crazy. I mean, really, they've been bad on both sides of the ball. I mean, their offensive rating with Kyrie and KD on the floor, even in their starting lineup, was sub 100 for a huge chunk of the season, which just, it shouldn't happen. So they need to just find like floor balance, which is another reason to argue to maybe blow this up or to build like a new team that's entirely KD centered. Like, they're too small in the backcourt and they just don't have the right sized players across this roster. And you're starting to see, I think, kind of the weirdness of that. But I think that there's an argument to be made about building a team that's entirely centered around KD instead of trying to make this KD Kyrie Ben thing happens, because the Simmons elephant in the room is definitely hurting them. And you can see the spacing that they get with him off the floor is worth the trade-off, because his defense has not been so shut down that it's transformed what they're doing on that end of the floor either.
I thought, like, I had high hopes for Simmons this season, mm-hmm. and maybe it is just like a little ring rust. He hasn't been completely healthy. Defense, though, is the thing where I just expected, okay, no matter how he looks offensively, he's going to be great defensively because that's his bread and butter. And he's just like bigger and faster and stronger than almost everybody he's going to match up against, no matter whether he's switching one through five. And he just hasn't looked the same. But I'm glad that you brought up the what do they do with the roster component, because our colleague Howard Beck wrote a story about this very situation. I'm going to read you his tweet. I recommend you go read the story as well. It's excellent. But he tweeted out, Simmons is a shadow. Kyrie suspended, and the clock is ticking on the next KD trade demand. Oh boy, is it. That little flourish I added. Time for the Nets to admit the obvious. It's over. Bring on the wrecking ball. Oh, Howard Beck, I love it. Ro, I'll put it to you. Is it over? Is it time to blow it up?
I do think it's probably time for them to get out of the Kyrie business. Again, I'm all for, again, finding a way to rehabilitate people, restore people, etc. But like, for so many reasons, I think they need to get out of the Kyrie business. I think he's been a detriment to what they want to do. They just lose all respect and authority, etc. Every time they kind of bend over backwards for him, I think that they need to get out of that. Whether it's trading him for 20 cents on the dollar or just outright cutting him, I think that would send a strong message about what the organization may actually value, you know, Ime Udoka potential hiring notwithstanding. The issue is, blow it up. Like, what can you get for Simmons? We don't know that you could get anything for Kyrie. And Durant, as we've seen, it's so hard to trade him. If they want to blow the team up, they're probably still going to wait till just December or January, until some people who sign contracts in the summer become available. So even if they wanted to blow it up, they're going to have to wait, which means if you're waiting a month, at least in the meantime, like, and you're seeing elements of a team that could be successful built around Durant, I would give that a shot. I would try to give that a shot before getting rid of him, because even if he has, you know, he's in the first year of a 4-year deal, even if he has 2 years left on his deal, you're going to get a massive haul back for him. So to me, I respect where Howard's coming from, and he's right. Listen, the team hasn't been that good this season. I would still give it a shot building around Durant, because there's just no way that, like, this is it for him being the best guy on a title team. I still think that there's a way to make it work around him, and I would at least try to give that an honest shot before getting rid of him. But I think getting rid of the other guys, I wouldn't hesitate about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really difficult spot, right? Because every team in the league would want KD. You kill to get somebody of his caliber. He's that good. Mm-hmm. The problem is, if you want to just do the KD thing and you want to move the other two guys, as you noted, what are you going to get back for them? Like, next to nothing now. I mean, who wants either of them right now? So that's a really tough spot. And then if you offload KD, you're not going to get like a commensurate return for him. So it's just it's a damned if they do, damned if they don't situation. It's really rough. I want to run one last Nets thing by you before we go to the Warriors. Turns out that KD is interested in being part of the new Washington Commanders, still a really dumb name, ownership group. He said, I know we've had some losing seasons, which is the understatement of the decade. And he said, in a perfect world, I'd be part of it. I would love to do it. I would love to give a little bit of money to be part of the Commanders. Still stupid, but we'll see. Hopefully it's somebody nice. I heard Jeff Bezos and Jay-Z, but you never know. He already has a 5% stake in the Philadelphia Union, who fell on hard times over the weekend. But do we like Kevin Durant buying part of his hometown football team?
Yeah, I'm all for teams actually being bought by people who, like, why would Jeff Bezos buy it? It would just be like a vanity thing. He has no connection to that area other than Amazon, maybe.
Well, he's got the Post.
Yeah, I guess. And I guess Amazon's opening up a thing there. But yeah, I think it's cool. I got no truck with it. It doesn't do much for me either way, John. I have to be honest.
If he buys in, he should demand that they change their name to something that is less sucky. Because, I mean, they were sitting right on Washington Football Team.
Yeah, that was a good one.
No frills, fell into it because they got rid of their stupid, awful.
They're obsessed with, forever racist name. They're obsessed with lunch pails in the NFL, you know, like who's bringing their lunch pail to work today. And that you don't get a more lunch pail name than Washington Football Team.
It was great. Yeah. And then they were like, no, 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 we're going to make it Commanders. All right, let's move on to more basketball. The Golden State Warriors, the defending NBA champions, they've lost 5 straight and 7 of 10. After blowing a 16-point lead and a loss to the Magic, Steve Kerr said, we have to save us because nobody else is coming. Spoiler alert, they rested everybody right after that against the Pelicans and lost. So nobody came to their rescue in-house or out. It was Kerr and Clay called it the road trip from hell, but said that they're not going to panic. Ro, you recently wrote a story saying you're not worried about the Warriors. Do you want to amend that? Are you worried now? Or are you still not
I'm
worried?
Still not quite panicked. You know, it's funny. Me and our buddy Dan Devine, we did like a Warriors temp check this time last week.
I know, I love that.
I was like, oh, I'm not that worried. And then they like went on to continue to lose 2 more games, including the Magic. I still think it just is what the question they have to ask ourselves is, what's our capacity for pain during the regular season? Because they're playing these like all bench units that they don't really need to be playing. They could probably figure out a way to get Wiseman out of the rotation and go with JaMychal Green as kind of their backup five. Maybe your bench is JaMychal, Poole, you know, DiVincenzo, Kuminga, some combination of those 4 guys. Maybe you mix in Moody and you still have a decent amount of depth there. What's hurting them right now is Kerr's commitment to this two-timeline experiment, right? Like he's shown a commitment to try and develop some of the other guys on the bench, even though Kuminga's now back in the rotation after being out. Like Kerr basically announced, like, we're going to have a new rotation, which is kind of a weird thing for a coach to say this early in the season, but they're still tinkering. The reason I have hope is like when Curry, Thompson, Wiggins, Draymond, and Looney play, that's one of the best lineups in the NBA. That's they've been one of the best units. That unit's like elite, elite, elite. I think like posting a net rating over 25. So they have a group like that, you know, a championship group. They still have Steph, who's one of the most difficult people to slow down in the NBA. Like he's been playing at an MVP Steph caliber level. So that's why I'm not worried, because I think if they want to shorten the rotation, they can. And it's just that they're choosing not to right now because they really want to see if they can kind of bring Wiseman, you know, to even an average level before the playoffs or something like that. So they have a group to fall back on, which is I'm not worried. In worst case, they could even look into trading him and trying to get more vets around Steph. But shout out to the Light Years pod guy, Sam Esfandiari, who we mentioned on this pod before me, and he posted last year, like they had some guys in their rotation who were more so in the primes of their career, even guys who weren't huge contributors, but like the Bielitsas, obviously Gary Payton, the second Otto Porter, they're definitely missing those types of vets. But I think that there's a way for them to kind of tighten things up when the stakes rise a little bit. It's just how much longer do they want to keep working on this timeline, the second timeline?
That's the question, because, you know, they come out of that Orlando game and they're saying, you know, we got to save us. We're the only ones who are going to ride to the rescue. And then they decide, like, they actively choose to basically rest all their main guys who would be able to save them. And they go with this bench lineup and they get throttled by the Pelicans. And it's like, all right. I mean, like, I guess they're really all in. It's a really interesting thing to watch, Ro, because as we sit here recording this, there are only 4 teams in the NBA with a worse record than the Golden State Warriors. Those teams are the Pistons, the Magic, the Rockets, and the Lakers.
Yeah,
3 of them are tanking.
They're only a half game ahead of the Lakers. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the Lakers are an abject disaster, and everybody keeps talking about like what a mess they are, and the Warriors are just like a half step ahead of them.
It was the lead to my story. It was like at one point last week, the Warriors even had a worse net rating. They still might. Like it's really crazy the how different the conversation's been around those two teams. And I think that is because I think ultimately it's like the Warriors are choosing to do this. It feels like they can choose to not do this at any point and kind of, like I said, tighten the rotation, play more vets, etc. I do think arrogance is not the right word, but there's something to be said about you know, Steph, it is can be the best player on a championship team, and I think this team is still a contender, even sitting here at 3-7. But why are you wasting his time? Like, why are you making life more difficult for Steph Curry? Like, why are you not also like this two timeline thing? Like, oh, like Kuminga, Moody, Wiseman. It doesn't matter how good they are. Like, none of those guys are going to become Steph. Like, those guys could all become really, really good all-star caliber players even. But if they don't have a Steph to revolve around, this two-timeline thing, there's no second – there's no second guy coming after Steph Curry. There's no – unless you're finding a second Steph Curry, like, this whole, like, plan to still be great in the future, to me, it's a little silly. It's all based around Steph. It's always been Steph. I still think he's the highest – value over replacement in the entire league. I still think he makes his teammates better than any player in the league. Like, and why are you wasting his time is the question I would ask, because I think there's a great argument to be made that you could trade those guys for like vets who are not in their mid 30s but maybe late 20s, and you could have a team that's so far and away the title favorite because you've gone all out and trying to support Steph with the right guys instead that they're trying to do this two timeline thing. And that I think is where what's to me, the bigger question is not, are the Warriors in trouble, but when are they going to pull the plug on this experiment?
Yeah. I mean, Kerr's talked about this, right? Where he's not going to be around forever and he wants to make sure that the team is set up for the future and all that is great. But I'm with you that you've got one of the great players, not just of this era and this generation, but ever. And like maximize that, maximize your window of winning championships. Now, I mean, we all thought the experiment was dead in 2019 when KD was leaving and Clay had multiple injuries and the Raptors were celebrating on their floor. And a couple years later, they reboot it and they win again. Like, that's what your focus should be. How did many you more really, of these can we get?
I don't know why my voice went so high there. Did you really think it was dead?
I like it.
Did you really think it was dead? I never bought into that. Really? I wanted to put the Warriors on the cover last year before the start of the season. I really thought they were going to like be a title contender.
Howard Beck and I had this conversation on his podcast and on Sports Illustrated Weekly, where in 2019, I'm sitting there and I'm writing my story and I'm like, this looks really grim. Right? I mean, like, everybody knew KD was leaving. Clay was injured and he didn't come back for, you know, a while. Steph ended up getting injured. It looked like, you know, the high water mark had been reached and they were on the downslope. And I was, you know, not surprised. I think, like, you know, when you have those guys healthy and they're all back together, that's great. But they weren't like the dominant force that they were during that run, right? Where it was inevitable.
Yeah.
They were just really good last year, and they ended up winning.
They're lower than their peak, especially the KD peak, but they've still never lost. That's not true. They've lost one playoff series in which Steph, Clay, and Dre were all healthy. One. And that was the 2016 NBA Finals, which, of course, changed on the Draymond suspension. But I never counted this team out. Like, I figured once Clay got back – and credit to them, like, they found guys like Poole, you know, they finally gave GP2 a proper NBA home. Yeah, I guess I was never that far out on this team. I can't pretend like I pick the Nuggets to win the finals every year, so that's part of the problem. So I guess I didn't pick them last year, but yeah, I was never, I'm not even trying to like look for like a pat on the back, but I guess I sometimes surprised to the degree which some people were out on them.
You're the keep calm and carry on guy. I like that about you. I am sound the alarm. Everything's the sky is falling.
You're eating, you know, a rotisserie chicken every single day, just being like, this is it.
That guy. Yeah. I can't even get into that right now. All right. So
if you were in Philly, would you have gone to see him eat the 40th rotisserie chicken?
Absolutely not. Although I did live very close to where the abandoned pier.
Why would you?
That one on.
I would have rather, if someone was like, here's free tickets to a World Series baseball game, or you can go watch this guy eat his 40th rotisserie chicken in 40 days. I'm picking the rotisserie chicken guy. Easy. No question. Yeah.
Well, then you should move to Philly because you'll fit right in. All right. So the Warriors, I am a little concerned about. I want to keep it in the West. We have two more teams I want to discuss. The team that I'm not worried about, unless you were hoping that they were just going to tank for Wembanyama, is the Utah Jazz, who keep doing this. I feel like every week, you and I are discussing the Jazz and going, hey, they're still winning. And it's very odd. And my question for you, I have multiple questions for you. I'll start with this one. Is this real?
It's getting to the point where like everyone wants to caveat it or poo-poo it, or it's getting to the point where it's like, you have to tell me what your definition of real is, because it's happening. And
But just to reverse your logic, you're not worried about the Warriors. That's not real. But the Jazz is real.
That is the funny thing about early in the season, right? Is it's like there's a certain level of you're willing to give certain teams benefits of the doubt because it like based on your preseason expectation. So the Warriors, it's like, I'm not worried. And you know, it's 3-7, whatever. And then there's a team like the Heat that I'm like 4-6, but I didn't like their offseason. So I'm like, this team, what's going on here? Yeah. You know? And then now we got the Jazz where it's like, everyone knows they suck. How much longer do they keep doing this? Lowry Markkanen has been fantastic.
He's killing it.
He might make an all-star team if he continues to play like this. They just have enough decent NBA players that they don't have a coherent roster, but Will Hardy's making it work. Like, Markkanen's been really good. Mike Conley is, like, turning back the clock some nights. He's been playing really well early in the season. Like, Olynyk has given them a lot. Like, Olynyk and Markkanen running these weird little, like, pick and pops, and they have so much shooting on the floor. Like, they're able to make it work. I think part of it.
I thought Sexton would be a bigger part of it, and yet they're still winning.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Clarkson's been really, really good as well, playing arguably the best basketball of his career. Yeah, all these guys we named are all legitimate rotation guys. They're not just guys you want. They're not just guys you're like, oh, that's not bad that we have him as our ninth man. It's like, oh, no, this guy's a good second, third, fourth scoring option.
They have a lot of professional basketball players, no stars, just a lot of like guys that you would throw into a rotation for any team and be like, we can get some quality minutes out of these guys. Which brings me to my next question about the Jazz. If you're Dealer Danny, you put this team together.
No, something we're not going to do on this podcast anymore, now that we've rid ourselves of all DPRB propagandists, is we're not going to do the thing where we refer to Danny Ainge by his first name. If we want to talk about my list of pet peeves with the Boston propaganda machine, like right. In the top threes, it's never Danny Ainge. It's always Danny. It's what do you think guys think Danny's going to do with this team? We're like, you know, Danny has his eye on. How many times have you been listening to a podcast and some Boston guy just calls him Danny? I hate it. So I like that you called him Dealer Danny. I know that you weren't.
Yeah.
I know that, but it's on this podcast from now on, he's Danny Ainge, okay? He doesn't get this first name treatment that he gets from all the little Boston, you know, propaganda machines.
He's out of Boston now. He's out of Boston.
But they're still running propaganda for him. That's the thing. They're still running like this is vintage Danny, or you know, Danny's up in his office wondering what moves he can make. Like, they haven't stopped. Him leaving to Utah has not stopped.
This is one of your best rants, and I fully co-sign it. I'm with you. The guy's an incredible general manager, though. And so this is my question for you, though. Does he need to pull the plug on this, or do you let it ride? Because like what he has assembled. And I'm with you. I think like we're at a point now where like you can believe your eyes. You can look at the standings. I've watched them play a bunch. They're I don't know that they'll be at the top of the Western Conference all season. But if they were like a solid playoff team as currently constructed, it would not surprise me. So if they're going to be in any shape for, you know, using their draft picks and you know, maybe the tanking for Wembanyama is already out the window, but the question is, do they pull the plug on this or do you let it go?
It's an interesting. I did see something like, God, I wish I could find the person who tweeted this. If they lost their next 25 games, they still wouldn't have the worst record in the NBA. Something crazy like that.
How does that work?
They've just already won too many games or something like that. That like whoever's in literal last place, like could also basically if they lost their next 25 games, like, there's a world in which the teams that are worse than them have also lost so many that they're still not in last place.
So, I mean, I'll answer the question then.
Sorry.
Because you're doing hypothetical.
I was going to say, and I'm hitting you with math, and I see the look on your face.
The question was, do you let it ride or pull the plug? I think he might have stumbled into something really fun here. You already have a plethora of draft picks. I would just let it ride and like see how these guys do. And maybe you're onto something that you can bolster by adding rather than subtracting.
Here's what I'll say. I wish they could let it ride. I don't think they will. I think it'd be great if there was a world in which they could let it ride, but the NBA has incentivized tanking too much. They're putting Wembanyama's games on TV. They're just like, hey, Adam Silver's like, we know we don't want anyone to tank, but also here's everyone. Watch this number one prospect. We're putting him on the NBA app because we want him to be a big star. You know, I'm not saying the NBA is being hypocritical, but come on. So the incentive.
Would the NBA do that?
That's incentive weird. For the Jazz to tank, I think, is ultimately still too strong. And frankly, the better some of these guys play, whether it's Markkanen or Olynyk or Mike Conley or Jordan Clarkson, they might even fetch more in a trade. They might get you a first now, or, you know, a first and an interesting player. So the incentives, I think, unfortunately, are just going to be too strong. I wish that weren't the case. I wish we could just talk about how fun this team is, how fun it is to watch them run their funky offense and, you know, scrape by defensively, even with some of these weird lineups. But the tanking incentive is just too strong. It's the structure we've created. It's the culture that the league has created. And it's going to be a fascinating test case. But I just think that the incentive for, you know, this fun year versus a chance at 7 years of Wembanyama is going to be too strong.
Yeah, I mean, for now they're fun, as you mentioned, and they're winning. It's just like, it's such a bizarre situation. We come on this show, and every week I expect them to, like, okay, now we're going to see the real Jazz, but they just keep winning. Last one for you, and then we're going to get out of here. Speaking of winning, no one has won more than the Milwaukee Bucks. As we record this, could change later, but as we record this, they are the NBA's only undefeated team. I had them top of the Eastern Conference along with the Boston Celtics. But they don't even have Chris Middleton yet, Ro. Right? I mean, like, they're just doing this on muscle memory with a team that's not at full strength, and they're just throttling people. Are they going to run away with the East?
Man, the Bucks are so good. It was the first week of the season. They were playing the Nets, and Giannis was guarding KD, and Giannis was guarding Ben Simmons, and he was just playing free safety. And it was terrifying. It was just like Giannis stomping around the court, doing whatever he wanted. And I was like, what are you supposed to do with this? This is terrifying to watch this guy not actually have to guard anybody on defense. They've been so good defensively. I want to pull it up. Their defensive rating right now is 100.6, which is, you know, a full two points clear of the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs are, like, you know, closer to fourth. I don't know, whatever one of those weird things is. They've been really good. They've been fantastic offensively. Ironically, Cleveland does have a better net rating than the Bucks, but they've been incredible on both ends of the floor. Like you said, they're doing it without Middleton. I'm so happy they're playing Javon Carter, who they made a huge mistake, I think, excising him from the rotation in that Boston series. I think he could have made a huge difference for them, especially to the degree that we're playing Grayson Allen. And they're doing no Joe Ingles yet either. He was kind of the really only offseason move. And I think that's good. I think you want him in a limited role until the playoffs. Keep his body as fresh as possible coming off that ACL tear. But yeah, they've just been an absolute juggernaut defensively. Brooke Lopez, who I was worried coming into the season, the guy missed most of last year with the back injury. I'm like, how much does he really have to give? And he's still there anchoring their drop scheme, making it tough for teams. Drew Holiday, they're just so well connected, or clearly so used to playing with each other, that while other teams, I think, kind of go through growing pains early in the season, figuring out a defensive scheme, their rotations, etc., they're on top of all of it, man. And they have Giannis.
And they have Giannis. That's a good one. This is my last one for you on the Bucks. I'm going to rattle some teams off here, and you stop me when you get to a team that you think can give the Bucks some trouble. I'm going to take the Celtics off the board because that's the obvious one. But in descending order of the Eastern Conference standings, the Cavaliers,
the Cavs,
Hawks,
are an interesting.
The Raptors. You like the Cavs. The Cavs look good.
The Cavs. The Cavs will be an interesting matchup, and I'm excited to see them play each other at full strength. One thing that interests me about the Cavs is, do they have – that series would be an absolute rock fight because both teams have really good defenses. Yeah. And both teams have defenses that are going to kind of dare some other guys on the other team to shoot. The Cavs are interesting to me because we still don't know who their fifth guy is yet. Is it going to be Kevin Love? Is it going to be Caris LeVert? I don't think it's going to be Isaac Okoro. But will they be able to have enough shooting? I mean, Donovan Mitchell's been playing unreal basketball.
Yeah, he really has.
And that's just such a good matchup, or such an interesting matchup, because are Middleton and Drew picking up Mitchell and Garland? How are the Cavs defending them the other way? But as I'm talking through it right now, I'm like, definitely would lean Milwaukee in that series. I mean,
of course.
Yeah, Toronto. I don't know if Toronto has enough size. I mean, who's guarding Giannis for them? It's going to be some combo of like Siakam, Anunoby, Achiuwa. I mean, their rookie Koloko has been really good. So, yeah, man. Outside of Boston, it's difficult, is what I'm getting at.
That's the point. That's the point that you got there, and I'm proud of you, because I was going to say that before we started this season, you and I did our conference previews, and I said it's the Eastern Conference is so wide open. Yes, you've got the two teams at the top, but I think it's as deep as it's been in forever, and it's going to be such a fun year and blah, blah, blah. Nope. It's a two-team conference. I mean, 10 games in, I'm declaring it over. It's the Bucks and
you're
the Celtics.
You're out on your Sixers already?
I'm not talking about them right now. We'll save that for a different show.
So now Harden's out for a month.
I'm still getting over the Philadelphia Phillies getting close but not pulling it off, and the Union losing an absolutely spectacular game to LAFC. So there's plenty of time for that other team some other day. But we're going to wrap this up. Tell people what you're working on that they can read you on SI.com.
Yeah, I should have a story that I've been working on for a little while now come out this week. I'm pretty excited about it. We spoke to a couple interesting guys. I know I'm being vague, but I'm not.
I can't read. Wait to read that very opaque pitch that you
I'm
just
80% sure it's going to come out. It's on a team that I love, that I talk about a lot on this podcast, that I write about a lot, that I think should be one of the best teams in the league when it's all said and done, and arguably a team that should at least make the conference finals, in my opinion, this year. So I'm working on that. We're looking into, I don't know that it's risen to the level I've got to write about it yet, but it's possible we're going to have to do something about the Russell Westbrook bench renaissance at some point. But yeah, keep your eyes peeled for Feature X coming, hopefully this
week. Keep your eyes peeled for Feature X. It's going to be a banger. He also wrote that piece that we talked about the Warriors, and he's not worried. I have a piece because I write about all kinds of different things about Christian Pulisic and not playing at Chelsea in the run-up to the World Cup. So if you're into soccer, check that out.
Also,
but read both of us on SI.com.
Also, shout out to Daryl Swenson. I hope that we talked about basketball quickly enough on the show today. I know we had a long opening that was not on the court related, but still basketball related. We got an email a couple weeks ago from our homie Daryl because Herring and I took 9 minutes to start talking about basketball on our episode. So I've been shouting him out ever since.
Shout out to him. Ro will be back on Friday with another episode of Open Floor. I'll be back on Monday. Thank you for listening, everybody.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.